Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of sacrament today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all so much for joining us. And we'll start, Lawrence, with our morning prayer.
Yes, I'm reading from Rudimental Divine Science, page 10, and Christian Science versus Pantheism, page 14. You must feel and know that God alone governs man, that his government is harmonious, that he is too pure to behold iniquity and divides his power with nothing evil or material, that material laws are only human beliefs which govern mortals wrongfully. Mortal ills are but errors of thought, diseases of mortal mind and not of matter, for matter cannot feel, see, or report pain or disease. Set your affections on things above. Love one another. Commune at the table of our Lord in one spirit. Worship in spirit and in truth. And live daily adoring, imploring, and living the divine life, truth, love, thou shalt partake of the bread that cometh down from heaven. Drink of the cup of salvation and be baptized in spirit. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you. All right, Karen, the watching point.
Watch number 186. Watch that you maintain the proper sequence. First, establishing the humility, which enables you to hear the still small voice. Then, using that spiritual authority and dominion thus gained, to amplify that voice to all creation. If when attacked by error, a student believes that all is expected of him is to kneel in humility, seeking God's help and power, he is mistaken. In order to vanquish error, he must exercise spiritual dominion and stand with authority. His sense of the infinite power he reflects must overawe and overcome the illusion which claims to oppose reality. When the battle is over and he is more than a conqueror, since he knew in advance that victory was always on the side of truth, in the peace that follows, he can again ascend the Mount of Humility to receive inspiration from God. If you are ever tempted to believe that it is your own power that heals, you need to kneel in humility in order to acknowledge God as the only power. Then you have your part to do, which you cannot neglect, namely, to apply divine power with authority and understanding to the human problem. In the story of the Good Samaritan, we have an illustration of a wrong order. When the priest and the Levite passed by the one who had fallen among thieves, they ignored the error before they had taken the human footsteps, which make the absolute stand possible. One must recognize the human need enough to meet it. If a student takes an absolute stand, refusing first to admit the claim of error, this shows that he forgets that in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy writes, quote, a knowledge of error and of its operations must precede that understanding of truth, which destroys error, end quote. Demonstration means taking what is true and compelling mortal mind or material sense to acknowledge it. In this process, the truth about the lie must precede the truth about truth, just as humility must precede authority.
Thank you. Okay, comments?
Well, I just love this watch. This church has really taught me this concept, and I think I spent a whole lifetime kicking stuff under the rug and just praying about it instead of facing it and seeing what it was trying to do and seeing that it didn't do it, like Mrs. Eddy says. So I'm very grateful for this one.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
This watch brings up very vital points. It talks about how you have to have humility first. Otherwise, it's nothing more than human arrogance that tries to exert itself, you know, to try to mimic that dominion or authority with the human will. And on the other hand, it mentions about if somebody needs to do something, they think the only thing they have to do is pray in humility to God and pray for his guidance and nothing more after that. Well, that's weakness. It's actually copping out. It's actually cowardice because, you know, we are God's image and likeness and God is omnipotent. That means we have authority from him to make things right. Actually, it's God that makes them right, but we act as his instrument.
Thank you.
And when you pray for guidance, do you really expect to get guidance to actually do something? When you pray for guidance, expect that you're going to get guidance to do something and then do it.
Yeah, and remember the hymn, I think it's 148, I think about a lot, this one little verse of it. He knows the way he taketh, and I will walk with him. Okay, this is the procedure, because very often it's I know the way I taketh, and I want God to walk with me, right? That doesn't work. This is the humility to acknowledge he knows the way he taketh. God knows where he's going, what he's doing. And we walk with him humbly by his side, not the other way around. I loved last week's watching point too, which we didn't get to talk about, but Carpenter says it is a small price to pay to put God in charge of all we have and are. Family, money, friends, health. Each morning we should realize that God is the head of our home and earnestly seek to know what he would have us to do. There is never any freedom resulting from neglecting God. Mrs. Eddy once defined hell as a state of neglecting or forgetting God. I think that is very significant, a wonderful quote of Mrs. Eddy. If you feel you're in hell, maybe check and see if you have forgotten and neglected God in some ways. I'm pretty sure she's saying that's the trouble. Put him head of your procession every morning of all things, family, money, friends, and health, and then seek him, walk with him, find out what he would have you do, not what you would have yourself do. What does he want of you today? That's the humility. And then, yes, not to ignore the problem. And as Elizabeth said, to shove it under the rug. I certainly was an expert at that myself. And there was fear in me. I didn't want to look at anything. Oh, it wasn't, you know, just.
It wasn't pleasant. You didn't want to look at it.
Yeah, I didn't want to look at it. I didn't want to know anything about it, have anything to do with it. And that was definitely cowardice and a lack of understanding God's power and a lack of understanding the nothingness of it. I had made it into a big somethingness.
I think this was one of the hardest things for me was, yes, I'm very familiar with this concept. You know, let's try to, you know, pray for guidance, but how does the answer come? You know, trying to understand that. And I think that's where having been part of this church now for some time, it's been very helpful that oftentimes, you know, it's just a feeling that you might have, but you have to have the courage to take some step that you think is the highest and best choice based on the feeling or in the guidance that you've prayed for. And then you can, in humility, again, stop and listen and make sure you're on the right path. And, you know, you may not get a, you're not going to hear a voice. I mean, maybe you will, but for me, it's always kind of been more of a, I feel at peace, you know, making this decision, even though it might be hard. And that to me is kind of how I feel my way through it.
Thank you. I think that
applies to most of us. You're right, Tony, because it's the still small voice, which is why you have to be in a quiet place and not allow yourself to be distracted. Just why, you know, turning on the radio or the television all day long, you're never going to hear that still small voice. It's not going to, you know, God isn't going to speak to all of us through a burning bush. You know, it's not going to be firecrackers and, you know, and stuff like that.
Necessarily. Florence?
No, I think sometimes it's not even a voice. You don't hear anything, but things work out a certain way. It's like something that you have to go to, well, it doesn't happen. Something, you know, happens that whatever it is doesn't happen, and then you are led another way. So it doesn't mean always a voice. Sometimes you just, if you're open to be led, that is, then you are led in the right way. But of course, when you pray, I mean, if you pray, then you pray for the courage as well to be able to do his will, because sometimes it's so contrary to what you thought that it might, you know, cause some hesitation there. Well, goodness, am I going to be able? But if you pray and pray in humility for both the courage and to hear the guidance and to be led by God, because yes, it is true. He knows the way he taketh. That's it. That's it. Yes.
You walk with him, and it'll come to me. It often it's just a nudge in a certain direction. It just feels This is the way. Walk ye in it. And if you're quiet and listening, you know, in Florence's testimony on Wednesday, she said it was quiet. It's how she got the healing in quietness and confidence. Shall be your strength. Mm-hmm. And Tony too, listening for the right voice that led him to do the right thing, and everything working out there in that situation. It does work when applied, but it has to be earnestly applied. And sometimes we think we are, and maybe we're not. So we're back to the drawing board. Keep at it.
But you still get a lesson.
You still get a lesson. Yes, indeed. You get a lesson. So, Jeremy, the watching, or the golden text.
What doth the Lord require of thee but to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God?
Thank you. That's one of the most beautiful verses, I think, in the Bible. And I looked up in, I guess it's in Miscellany. Mrs. Eddy says this on page 283. Right thoughts and deeds are the sovereign remedies for all earth's woes. Sin is its own enemy. Right has its recompense, even though it be betrayed. Wrong may be a man's highest sense of right until he grasps of goodness, until his grasp of goodness grows stronger. It is always safe to be just. When pride, self, and human reason reign, injustice is rampant. Individuals as nations unite harmoniously on the basis of justice, and this is accomplished when self is lost in love or God's own plan of salvation. To do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly, is the standard of Christian Science. I thought that was beautiful and interesting too. That is the standard, this statement. To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with thy God. It simplifies things in many ways, but it also requires great dedication. In one of Carrie's articles that she sent, it to do justly. This is from What God Requires by Albert Gilmore. To do justly implies the dealing with all with justice, without favoritism, without prejudice, but with equity in all things. That can be a neat trick sometimes, you know, not to be have any preconceived notions, or but with the justice of God, to see it fairly, objectively, without prejudice. And then to love mercy means not just to be merciful, but to love, to exercise mercy. And I guess even look for ways to do it. Why not? Love mercy. And then to walk humbly with thy God tells us how to live righteously, to conform one's thoughts and acts to the divine in all ways, to express the divine qualities, and to eliminate all that does not measure up to this standard. So that's working at this, right? Working at it every day. I thought this lesson, it brings out so clearly, yes, about mercy, 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 over and over. But then also to follow Jesus' commandments, to do what he is doing. There is no excuse, folks. If you've been in this science all these years and you still have to rely on a practitioner to do everything, there's something very wrong. You need to be growing out past that. It's fine to get help, yes, but not you're not to be an invalid. You're to do this work. I think it is what has held up a lot of the progress of science. Everyone should be working out their own salvation with fear and trembling. Everyone, all of you, to some degree, is that not plain in this lesson? It doesn't say leave it to someone else, does it?
Just read that in Martha Wilcox. I'll find that article where she says that it will hurt the cause of Christian Science if you don't do your independent work.
You must do your independent work yourself. You've got to grow. No one can do it for you. And if you refuse, you'll find yourself in a spot where you're forced to.
Mm-hmm. Because the needing.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bruce.
Okay, that's the human nature, to try to take the easiest and simplest route. You know, working out your salvation requires some effort. And I think this is where a lot of the traditional Christian sentiment has gone wrong in this whole idea of sacrament, because, you know, in Luke 22:19, it says, this do in commemoration of me. But so they think that just eating bread and drinking wine is going to be commemorating the life of our Master Jesus Christ. And Mary Baker Eddy, of course, makes this very clear, where she says that the true sense is spiritually lost if sacrament is confined to the use of bread and wine. Let it be remembered that Luke was not there at the Last Supper. And to say a little bit more about this, there's something in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. But remember, Paul wasn't there either. And none of those that were there says, no, you repeat this thing as a ritual, and then you'll be commemorating the life of Jesus. But no, that's not it. It's obeying his commandments that commemorates the life of Jesus. Remember, Jesus says, those that believe in me, the works that I do, will he do also. So if you are doing the works that Jesus did, you're commemorating the life of Jesus. And this is sacrament, obeying his commandments.
Yes. And she says it over and over and over. Thank you. There's no getting around it. You might try, but you can't. You have to do this. You all are practitioners in your own right. So that doesn't mean you shouldn't get help when you need it, but it means that you need to be working this science yourself, very much so. Okay, Florence.
No, and the two things that I saw in Watchers' Prayers and Arguments this week, Mrs. Eddy was saying that Mrs. Eddy furnished the tools of scientific thought and work, but she told her students always to go to God for the wisdom to use these tools correctly, as well as for the love to put into them the unction necessary. And then she says again that no student should approach any problem, even though he uses Mrs. Eddy's exact phraseology, without seeking God's wisdom to direct him and God's love to inspire him, since God alone can guide one to treat a case scientifically and enable him to put into it the divine love that heals. That to me is really what the instruction from her, how we should be doing. Everyone, like you said, everybody is really a practitioner. And I see that some people, because of what they're doing themselves, you know, in obedience to some of these instructions, makes their healing come quicker, easier.
Most definitely. Most definitely. Yes, if you're not getting the healing, and even if you're having practitioner help, it's because you're not. Mrs. Eddy or Mrs. Evans used to tell us it's at least a 50-50%. You're just dragging your heels. You're expecting the practitioner to do everything. And then you wonder why some people do get their healings faster. Well, that's it. They're putting more into it and have the faith in it. You've got to take part in this. You cannot evade it. You cannot. Otherwise, just go to the medical. Don't say you're a Christian scientist. You're not. You're not a Christian scientist. You're just a freeloader, right? You just want a quick fix. No, this takes work. Go ahead.
What's happened to me recently is my whole concept of prayer in the last, I don't know, year or so. But anyway, since coming here, but particularly in the last year, my whole concept of prayer is completely different. I came here thinking, from all my experience in Christian Science, that I was praying to get a healing. I just don't know how I just missed the, but that's not what prayer is at all. And that has that's what's changed my whole experience is, why? What is prayer? Because there are a lot of people praying in this world that aren't getting their healings, and you know the Bible says if you pray amiss, that's why you're not getting your healing. That's why you're not. So I've been praying amiss until I finally figured out what prayer really is, and it's quietly listening to God and hearing his voice and knowing that there's nothing that I need to change in God's world for anybody, myself or anything. And that's, I've read in the chapter, Mrs. Eddy, you know, prayer and science and health, that whole chapter has changed for me, what she's really saying. And wow, that's been a big change for me.
Very much.
I too like, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I too like Karen, have had that same experience. And I realized that I was praying to get when I really needed to be praying to know who I really am as God, and not praying to, you know, have this done and have that done. But knowing that as a child of God, he's showing me who I am, perfect. And that is such a relief to know that I've been doing it wrong also. Because I think a lot of Christian scientists, especially in the organization, are praying to get something because you're really praying against the truth. you are when you do that, because you're making a reality that's something that he never created and that doesn't really exist. But when we turn wholeheartedly to him, and it has to be consistent, that's the other thing I've learned too. It's not just a here or there type of attitude. It is has to be consistent. And it's really wonderful to have these tools and to have this enlightenment and to realize I've done something the opposite of what I should have been doing. And I'm grateful for that. Because we hear a lot of times, be grateful for these things that come to you that seem to be problems so that you can work them out through God. And not that you're working a problem out, but you're working to know who you really are. And I'm so grateful for that.
Thank you. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mrs. Eddy has said somewhere that prayer is the acknowledgement of present perfection. Mm-hmm. It's affirmation, it's knowing. But all of that is in her chapter on prayer. But you see, our eyes have been beholden. We sometimes don't see. That's why you've got to arouse yourself and keep working at it. It's all there. It's all in there very clearly. So
And you know, as far as the motive for prayer is Bicknell Young has written a good article on the subject. The article entitled "If I Say I Want" speaks to this very well.
Yeah, and you're saying you don't have, and
don't it's have it.
Yeah, present perfection means you do have it. It's a matter of seeing. So thank you all. Along with the golden text, one of the articles Carrie sent did relate it to our daily duties. And I thought that was a good relationship, because in our daily duties, which I hope you all know, I hope you all have memorized, and I hope you all use often, there's a reason why they're called daily duties. You should be working them every day, and it will help you do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God if you do these things daily, every day. The daily prayer, certainly the rule for motives and acts, which definitely relates to Micah. Neither animosity nor mere personal attachment should impel the motives or acts of the members of the Mother Church. In science, divine love alone governs man, and a Christian Scientist reflects the sweet amenities of love. And listen closely. The first one is in rebuking sin, in true brotherliness, charitableness, and forgiveness. The members of this church should daily watch and pray to be delivered from all evil, from prophesying, judging, condemning, counseling, influencing, or being influenced erroneously. This is an extremely cleansing treatment. These three all are. But that's no small task when you think about what is being required here. And it's very easy to prophesy, oh, this might happen, or look, this that's going to happen, or judge, or condemn, counsel, influence, or let yourself be influenced erroneously. I've been reading in Science and Health, the Christian Science Practice, and the end, you know, is about the trial. And I've read it many times, but it struck me the other day that when Mrs. Eddy says, morbid secretion hypnotized the prisoner and took control of his mind, making him despondent. Wow, you know, she didn't mince words, did she?
No.
If you're feeling depressed, despondent, sick, any of those things, you have been hypnotized and something has taken control of your mind and you need to wake up. And no, it's a big nothing, but you seem to be sucked into something that's not true. But I thought that was very, very good, very plain, None of us want to be hypnotized and have our mind controlled and feel depressed. You're feeling sick, depressed, any of those things, that's what's going on. Rousey, rousey, face the foe. Don't allow it. Rebel against it and claim your right as a son or daughter of the king.
I just looked up despondent in the 1828 dictionary, and it says losing courage at the loss of hope, sinking into dejection, depressed and inactive in despair.
Yes, that's what it wants you to do, to get all, you know, lose your fight, lose your courage, just sink down into it. No one has to do that. No one can take control of your mind. You have to consent to it. No one can just do it. You consent to it by your fearful thoughts, your negative thoughts, all of that. Don't do it.
It's all negative stuff.
It's all negative stuff. Yes.
They call those things downers. they sink you right down into the hole that you're headed toward.
Yes, that downward, inward, hellward. That's quoting Mrs. Eddy rather than outward, upward, heavenward.
Heavenward.
Yes, go heavenward.
Yeah, they're all signs that divine, something other than divine love is governing you at the time.
Right, and you've let it. Maybe it started off you're out of sorts, or you're angry with somebody, or something's upsetting you, and then you just let it go downhill from there.
But
catch it.
But it all shows that when that happens to me, when it happens, if it happens, it just shows I'm not in science.
Yep.
I'm in something else. But we have the proof now, at least we should in our lives, that science works, which means we just have to rouse ourselves to get back into science. And if we do that, so Mrs. Eddy says, trials are proofs of God's care because they push you to get back into science where God does, in fact, care for you.
And Mrs. Eddy also says, when these things cease to bless, they will cease to occur. So get the blessing and get out of it. And I loved Linda's testimony Wednesday because, you know, she'd been in this hole of negativity and fear and all that, and bad habits of thinking that way. And she showed how she pulled herself out of it. And one of it, she said she couldn't force her growth. But each day she would say, what bad habit can I change? What fear can I face? What joy can I acknowledge? What good do I see, no matter how modest? And what can I be grateful for? That's a great list. Do that. Check yourself at night. So what bad habit did you change? What fear did you face? What joy did you acknowledge? What good did you see? And what are you grateful for? And keep that up. Keep up that discipline. And she tells how, you know, she pulled out of it.
The gratitude was a big part of it, too. And I could even tell when my gratitude would start waning. It would be very, you know, even if it's a little waning, I mean, boy, you have to just, that gratitude is huge.
It's huge.
I'm grateful to have learned that from my practitioner.
Yes.
And going back to depression that you were talking about a minute ago, I love where Mrs. Eddy says, and I paraphrase, but it's like those bad thoughts are like wandering pollen, just floating around looking for somewhere to lodge. And if people could just realize that that's not your thought and you don't have to claim it, because so many people, they think that, you know, this is part of them. And so then they obviously act it out and accept it and are it. And so when you realize that those thoughts are just presenting themselves to you for, you have a choice whether to accept it or not, and then you live accordingly, it's so important not to accept a thought that is not your own. And you can tell right away that it's not your own if it's not godly. So, yeah, I've been very grateful for that.
Thank you. You sure can. Is this a thought from God that loves me? And then what other people do is they blame their circumstances or their, you know, where they live. Well, if I live somewhere else, if I were surrounded by Christian Scientists, I wouldn't have any trouble. Everything would be just great. Why? Because everybody would be propping you up all the time. So, or, you know, if I lived in that side of town, everything would be perfect. I'd just be great. If I were married to so-and-so, everything would be wonderful. Well, honey bunch, that's not going to happen. First of all, it won't happen, not with that state of thought. And second of all, that is not what you need. And you've got to learn what you need. What you need, what we all need, is God. That is what we all need.
Good young fish, take it with you no matter where you go.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. You will just find it sitting there waiting for you wherever you think you're going to go, where everything is going to be great. And everybody has it better than me. And everything is wonderful in someone else's life. But I'm just a wreck.
I think the worst one, because it's maybe the most prevalent or strongest one, is if I had different parents, if I weren't born into this condition.
Yeah.
Well, this gets back to knowing who you are as God's child, as God's image and likeness. Because that belief of human parenthood is a nasty one.
I think that's why if we all know that God is the parent, the ultimate parent, really, that is really, really, really beautiful and uplifting. Yep. Because it's that, you know, this earthly parents, you know, my father said this, my mother said this, you know, all of that. But if we are taught so that we could go past that to know, no, God made me, you know, and he made me in his own image and likeness. He loves me. He loves me. I mean, what more?
What more? Thank you. Yes. And what Jeremy said, and he's come out of this belief of, you know, unfortunate parents, I guess. It's a belief. How much power, how much do you think about it? Do you rah-rah-rah-rah-rah about your parents or about anybody or any unfortunate situation? You keep it alive in thought. So
another Bible passage that's really helped me recently is when Jesus says, "Peace I give unto you, not as the world giveth, give I unto you." And that has had so much more meaning to me, because the world will never, in any apparent, whatever the world says about you, it will never give us peace. And I was always, I was just sort of happy, you know, if things worldly looked great. But boy, just when you think everything's going just great, guess what happens? Like, whoops, I'm leaning on the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. But the peace I give, God is constantly giving, 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 giving. But it's only his peace. And that statement right there has just changed so much. He's, "I give unto you, will never leave you." But the other, one day this, you know, as you're always, people are always waiting for the next shoe to drop. Well, that's what the world does. It's like, "I'll give you a great day today, but tomorrow, watch out."
Yep, it's ready to smack you. So, nope, that's not where we get it. Mm-mm. Thank you, Karen. And, you know, this, I found this in looking up things in Prose Works on Mercy and Golden Texts. On page 151 of Miscellaneous Writings, "God is our Father and our Mother, our Minister and the Great Physician. He is man's only real relative on earth and in heaven. David sang, 'Whom have I in heaven but thee? And there is none upon the earth that I desire beside thee.' Brother, sister, beloved in the Lord, knowest thou thyself, and art thou acquainted with God? If not, I pray thee, as a Christian Scientist, delay not to make him thy first acquaintance. Glorious things are spoken of you in his word. Ye are a chosen people whose God is what? Even all. May mercy and truth go before you. Mercy and truth. May the lamp of your life continually be full of oil, and you be wedded to the spiritual idea Christ. Then will you heal and teach and preach on the ascending scale of everlasting life and love. Affectionately yours in Christ. If God is our father, our mother, our minister, our great physician, our only real relative on earth and in heaven, what else is there? What else do we need? What are you belly aching about? As my father would tell me. So
greater desire.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And then this too on go ahead and say something.
And since God is always giving, and since he is and has all that there is, we have access to everything that there is. And we should always be giving, giving, giving ourselves as Jesus did. He showed us.
And that's living the divine life. And that is really what we're here for. You heard the testimony on Wednesday about the fires in France, and the person involved in that said something I thought very interesting, because after that happened, then a neighbor or someone came to him and said that 300 houses had been evacuated because the fire was right up to the homes. And we began praying about that. And I also know that the weather committee is praying about the fires in Europe. But anyway, the next day he heard they came up to the door and it all stopped. Fires stopped. And he was so happy, as we all are when we hear good news like that. But he likened it to the Good Samaritan. And it's really true. You know, when you hear these stories, our watching that we do, you hear these stories, we don't pass by the other side and say, oh, that doesn't affect me. We better not. We pray for whoever, wherever, whatever the condition is. We know the truth is present right there, and there's only the one power, and God loves his creation and cares for it, and he did not make extreme weather conditions. And in knowing that truth, there's a mighty power. But I thought that was I like that he had said that it's like being the Good Samaritan, not turning the other way, but offering assistance immediately to the situation right away. Not walking by, oh, it's not my house isn't affected, so I don't care. No. And this is mercy. Mercy. And this we must have. And as Gary was just saying, love. It's all about the love. Love and mercy are handmaids, Mrs. Eddy says. They go together, and also justice. And
also mercy. Living the golden rule.
Yes, living the golden rule. If you were in that condition, you'd want help, any kind of help you could get, certainly prayerful help. And all of this is living the sacrament. It is daily deeds. What does the lesson say? Instead of just, these, as Bruce was saying, these empty sacrifices.
Yeah, it's sad that the phrase divine service has come so generally to mean public worship instead of daily deeds.
Daily deeds. And this, doing this, all of us doing this together daily, this is what will bring in the millennium. It's already here. We just have to see it, acknowledge it, as we've talked about with prayer, present acknowledgement, seeing it, not pleading that God do something, see what he's already done right here and right now.
Yeah, I think that's why, I learned here that if you see an ambulance going by, you think rightly about the situation. If you see a fire truck going by, you think rightly about it. You know, again, it's not ignoring all this. This is just being loving, and it has effect.
Thank you. Yes, it is. It's paying attention and praying and not passing on the other side. Whatever the problem we see, we are always doing it. It's what we do, right? It's what we do. Mm-hmm. And then in Miscellaneous Writings 250, Mrs. Eddy's beautiful article, Love. Love is not something put upon a shelf to be taken down on rare occasions with sugar tongs and laid on a rose leaf. I make strong demands on love, call for active witnesses to prove it, and noble sacrifices and grand achievements as its result. Unless these appear, I cast aside the word as a sham and counterfeit, having no ring of the true metal. Love cannot be a mere abstraction or goodness without activity and power. As a human quality, the glorious significance of affection is more than words. It is the tender, unselfish deed done in secret, the silent, ceaseless prayer, the self-forgetful heart that overflows, the veiled form stealing on an errand of mercy out of a side door, the little feet tripping along the sidewalk, the gentle hand opening the door that turns toward want and woe, sickness and sorrow, and thus lighting the dark places of the earth. This is what we do. It's part of being a Christian Scientist. And it is part of being merciful, isn't it? Now, this isn't, again, we talk about do-goody or false sympathy, or, you know, people will try to take your oil. They'll try to drain you. And that is animal magnetism. And when you help them or enable them, you're enabling something you should not. They need to learn whatever lessons they need to learn. And you have to know the difference. But God will tell you the difference. And you will know. But those that truly need it, and those that truly need it aren't trying to suck your blood. They're not. They just need an encouragement. And then they're so grateful for it. And they run with the ball. The others just want to take your time and energy and talk and this and that and try to convince you how awful their condition is. And that you must not allow. That is allowing error to go on. So be mindful of that.
One of the characteristics of Jesus' healings, the many that are in the Testament, was that he required the other person to do something. And the effort on their part coordinated with his prayers, and the healing came.
Thank you.
No freebie handouts.
That's right. No. And that's true, you know, with our children too, or Mrs. Eddy says, as much as we'd like to pass people over a fault, a lot of times they have to learn the lesson. And in this week's lesson, it also brings out on the Sabbath day. I mean, it sounds ludicrous now, but do you think the Pharisees trying to get Jesus not to do good deeds on the Sabbath day, or to use the Sabbath day just for all these rituals and laws rather than to help? No, merciful, always. So it's a wonderful lesson full of that, and how it brings out that is true sacrament, living that love. Also, there was a beautiful article Carrie sent. I can't actually find it right now, but it brought out a really good point about, no, actually it was not, it was Mrs. Eddy talking about this in Prose Works, how, you know, there are quacks that tell you what to do and tell you all kinds of things. And I'm quacks, whatever you want to call them, sometimes just those who study matter and the body, and And yet we have this wonderful, merciful is the word she used, merciful God who pours out blessings every day, has given man dominion over all things, who loves his creation. And yet we doubt that. Let's not doubt that. Let's doubt the other, okay? The other, that matter that says this, that, and the next thing is wrong with you. And let us acknowledge God's presence and power, his merciful love toward us. Shardy found a beautiful article.
I'm going to just read the very beginning.
Good, thank you.
Okay, this is from May 5th, 1906, issue of Christian Science Sentinel by Blanche H. Hoag. The title is The Eternal Mercy. In the lamentations of Jeremiah, God's mercies are recalled, and it is written of them, they are new every morning, tender and clear, like the early shining of the morning dew. The loving kindness of the Lord springs anew with each awakening in that heart which turns to God, to him, for all that the day they bring forth, a new day, has such wondrous possibilities. It holds such untried opportunities for knowing and being and doing all that is good.
Thank you. I love that. So beautiful. I think actually Carrie found that a while ago. I remember it because it was, that's okay. It's good to go over it again because it's so beautiful. His tender mercies, fresh and new, every morning. You have them, folks. You have them. Be aware of them. A new slate to do everything right, to follow those three daily duties better today. And it'll make for a much better day. And now have to end.
Yeah, it's like that prayer in The Chosen that they do in the morning, you know.
Oh, yes.
I forget the exact thing, but something about awakening me from slumber and all that.
Oh, right. Yes. Yep. Okay.
We're going to end with an article from an article entitled Signs of the Times by Reverend Marshall L. Gould. And this is from the 1931 Sentinel. And he writes, you cannot always tell by the expression on a person's face at any given moment whether he is for the most part happy or otherwise. It is good to remember this, or a stroll down Main Street would be a discomforting experience. Half the ills in life are caused by the tension under which people live. The haunting sense of never having time enough to do all that is expected of them. Many are acutely unhappy because they are wrongly placed in uncongenial surroundings, tied to uncongenial tasks. Many are forever on the rack because of material insecurity, misgivings about the future. Most of us are too much at the mercy of circumstances. And yet, our chief resources are within ourselves and have more to do with happiness or unhappiness than either environment or possessions. A Wilfred Grenfell is bound to be happy, or a Scrooge would be miserable. Go back to the first word of the Sermon on the Mount, as it fell from the lips of the greatest teacher the world has ever known. The first word was blessed, which means happy in the highest degree. That is God's will for man. That is the divine intention for human life. It is the first word in the manifesto of the kingdom, brimming over with just what humanity is seeking after in a thousand false ways. And happiness is declared to depend not on doing, not on possessing, but on being. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are the peacemakers. Not a word about happiness depending on doing or possessing. It is what one is that matters. The happiness of the kingdom is a natural sequence, not an arbitrary reward. Many a one stands outside certain circumstances of life saying, If only I were in those circumstances, I would be happy. It is extremely doubtful if he would be. Happiness has to begin in the man himself, never without him. Let the Christ once take hold, and it changes the whole environments by changing the man himself. But the best sort of character will create conditions that are bound to result in happiness. End quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.